Oh, wait, we don't have six, right? That's Dolores, and she's the one.
Four, five, six.
No, but you have Wendy.
We have six.
Rudolph,
oh,
I just heard
that.
Yeah, I just heard a voice.
Yeah. Well, to see her, so I thought I just heard her. We
did
some.
Did Wendy didn't have her screen on?
I have limited Wi-Fi, she says. She will keep her camera off.
Yep, I can hear you guys and see everyone, but if that's okay, I want to preserve as much capacity for audio and connectivity as we've got here. Thank you.
All right, Siri, then I think
you're ready.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call to order the Wednesday, February 21st, 2024 meeting of the Board of Directors of the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. I apologize that I have to attend remotely under AB 2449, the Just Cause. We've got just a family medical emergency that we're dealing with, and so I need to be remote, but I appreciate everybody's patience as we're doing that. So we're going to begin with a Pledge of Allegiance. Director Adams, I see you there, and if you wouldn't mind standing and leading us in the pledge, that'd be great.
Thank you, Zach. Please join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Thank you, Mary, for that. All right, we'll begin, Siri, with a roll call, please.
All right, Director Carbone, here. Director Perez. Director Kuzmicki. Director LaVar. Director Lopez, Director Asonio, Director Eskew.
I'm here, remote.
Director Adams,
here.
Director Hernandez,
here.
Director Brown, here. Chair Friend,
here.
Two, four, six. We have quorum, sir.
Awesome. Well, we're going to begin with welcoming the new members that helped make quorum and our new legal counsel as well. I believe that we have two of the three folks here, correct? I don't believe Director Perez is here. Is that correct, Siri?
Can you repeat the last sentence, please?
I think that Director Adams is here, and I know that our new counsel is here, but Director Perez was not here. Is that right?
Correct. He is not here, and Director Arsenio just arrived.
Awesome. Well, Mary, we'd like to welcome you to MBARD. This is where all of the important work for the entire region happens. And so it's fitting that we would do it right now as you and I are both sunsetting off of these roles. And Kelly, it's great to have, I know you've been introduced to us previously, but we've been really, really fortunate with Les's guidance, and he speaks about as highly of you as I've ever heard him speak of anybody. So welcome to our team. We're excited to have you also aboard.
Thank you so much, Chair. I'm excited to work with you all.
Just keep us out of trouble.
I'm
going to move item five to the end of the regular agenda because the two folks that we nominated to be chair and vice chair aren't present today. And so that would make a little bit of a challenge for us. That's partially part of the reason why they were congratulated with becoming chair and vice chair. So we'll move item five to become item 21.1, if that's okay, Siri. And we'll move straight on to the presentations of our outgoing board members. Rich, can I hand that to you?
Yes, thank you, Chair, members of the board. It's that time that we recognize outgoing board members, and this has become a tradition. We recognize the board members with a board. So for both Glenn and Dolores, they will be receiving one of these penny boards. I know it looks like a paddle, but it is a serving tray. And it says, engraved in laser, in appreciation of service from Monterey Bay Air Resources District with the today's date. So you'll be receiving these shortly. Dolores, we just received your, we just put in your order because we received your notice a little late. However, Dolores will be staying on as an alternate, is my understanding, and Rick Perez will be taking her place from the Hollister City Council. So thank you very much. I speak, I'm sure, on behalf of the board, but staff here as well. Thank you very much for your service. You'll be missed, but you can contact us at any time if you have any questions or if you have any information you'd like us to disseminate. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you very much. And I, Chair, friend, just thank you so much for your leadership. And it's been fun. I'm not off the board, so I'm the alternate. And I also want to thank staff. They've just been phenomenal and really enjoyed getting to know my colleagues on the board. And there's great work to be done, especially the community outreach. So not officially gone, but definitely really love working with everybody and enjoyed the work. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Director Morales. Thank you, Mr. Stedman. We'll open this up to public comment. Is there any member of the community that would like to address us on items that are not on today's agenda or within the purview of the Air District? Is there anybody there in the Air District location?
No one in the boardroom, no hands raised virtually, and nothing received at the office.
Great. So seeing none, we'll close public comment and we'll move to item 8, which is the report of the committee chairs. As the chair of the Budget Personnel Nominating Committee, we functionally just made a recommendation that will be coming at the end of this agenda for a new chair and vice chair of the committee, not to steal the thunder of that item, but it was to make Director Lopez, who's the current vice chair, as chair, and Director Kosmicki as the vice chair, to ensure that San Benito County also had a leadership role. There was no really additional actions that we took other than just pro forma actions on that committee. And Mr. Stedman, did the advisory committee meet?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the advisory committee met on February 1st. They elected a chair and vice chair, which are as follows. Janet Brennan remains as chair, and vice chair is Alan Stroh. We also received or provided presentations to the advisory committee, much of which you're going to see today. They had a chance to review the presentations and make comments on them. So hopefully they're even better than they received on February 1st.
Thank you. Are there any comments from any of the board members before we move on to the report from Mr. Stedman? I see no hands online. Director Askew, I don't see, and nobody in chambers. So I think we'll move to item 10, which is a report from the Air Pollution Control Officer, Mr. Stedman.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the board, in our engineering and compliance division, we launched 2 online tools for the public in January. For complaints, we added a link to our website, so complaints can be submitted online directly into our database. Second, we added a permit search webpage to allow the public to research or search permits in our database based on information such as permit type and address. We also included extensive instructions on the website on how to do both of these items. Also, one of the standing agenda items is a report on marina odor complaints. We received 6 complaints since the last board meeting. I will say empirically, I make a weekly drive in the evenings from Aptos to Monterey, and I smell just about every type of odor you can, starting at Moss Landing with the cannabis production, ending up with the landfill. It definitely was landfill odor, and then it finished up with a nice smell of compost and those like Christmas trees being ground up. So that costs nothing. I was able to determine all that with my olfactory sense. So we know that there's a lot going on with trying to identify and attribute the odors to each specific source, and City Marina has undertaken exhaustive, unintended study to try to attribute where these odors are complained. I think they're all coming from various sources. So trying to decide the percentage among them is going to be very difficult. In planning and air monitoring, our wood stove changeout program, which launched on December 14th, which offers incentives to replace non-EPA certified wood stoves, fireplace inserts, or open hearth fireplaces with low smoke emitting EPA certified wood or pellet stoves or fireplace inserts, electric stoves, or ductless mini split heat pumps, is ongoing. propane and natural gas replacement devices are no longer included. This is because the California Air Resources Board, which is funding a lot of this program, is getting away from combustion of all types, including motor vehicles. So they don't want to see an investment. I would argue that natural gas and propane are significantly cleaner than any wood stoves. So that's a little bit unfortunate. But hopefully we can get folks to move to the electric devices. There's some reliability issues during winter when power goes out. But we got off to a really slow start, so we decided to juice up the program, and we've increased the incentive significantly, in part because a lot of counties and cities were charging permit fees, which made the obtaining an incentive and using the incentive to replace the wood stove even more financially difficult. So right now we're increasing the incentives to $2,500 for wood to wood changeouts, $5,000 for wood to heat pump changeouts. And, you know, these heat pumps can actually, for a whole house, if we want to do the right, it can cost in the $20,000 to $30,000. So for single rooms and smaller homes, it certainly can be done for about $5,000. Our landscape equipment exchange program, LEAP, was launched on November 6th and is still providing residents and commercial operations with incentives to replace old combustion landscape equipment, such as lawnmowers and leaf blowers, with new cordless zero emission equipment. We received $350,000 in project funds, and then we added an additional $80,000 and redirected that to be used for residential programs. So to date, we've replaced 73 pieces of lawn and garden equipment, and with about $667,000 expended. So we're well on the way. I think this is going to, we're going to spend down the funds pretty quickly, and we're trying to get the word out, and I've got some information on that later in my outreach updates. Okay. I may have to wing it here, but it looks like I'm missing my third page. Lastly, I would just like to say we're also having an electric school bus that will be delivered to San Benito High School as part of our zero emission school bus program. This provides funding to local districts to assist with the purchase of electric school buses and charging infrastructure. Looks like San Benito High School was granted $297,000 from our zero emission school bus program, which was stacked with $198,000 from California zero emission bus voucher program. So with the combined funding, San Benito High School will receive the electric bus for free. That's really good news. Moving on to outreach, we did have an ad hoc committee meeting. It turned out to be Director Arsenio and myself, but I think it was very productive. I got some really good information about outreach into the community. And if there are specific ways and means that you would like to see us tackle and take on to get word out about our programs, please do not hesitate to contact me, and we can set something up. We are going to be trying to participate in more community events and get the word out more robustly in the future. Our e-newsletter in English and Spanish was published on January 11th. Our landscape equipment other programs are actually being run on KZU, KPIG, and KSQD, SQD, which is a new one, I guess, up in Scotts Valley. So these programs will be receiving a lot of media attention. We'll have a booth at the 18th Annual Earth Day Marina event on Sunday, April 13th, 9 to 1 p.m. at the Marina Library. And then I just wanted to mention our 50th anniversary is scheduled to happen in the month of July. So we're talking about doing an open house here. And We're currently in stages of early planning stages for the open house. So if you have any thoughts or suggestions, I'm open to hear those as well. And then something that maybe we can do for you or you can do for us, and I'll have Siri pop up this announcement. We're looking at other air districts, and they're utilizing some of their board members and representatives to advertise some of their programs. So I may be contacting you, and we may take a photo of you and get the word out and put this on our website and social media links. So this is from San Joaquin. So stay tuned for that. On personnel issues, we're currently our third year of our five-year contract with SEIU Local 521. The contract does allow for reopening the compensation provisions, as well as two other articles contained in the MOU for the last 2 years of the contract. So we're going to start negotiations. They contacted us, and we'll be working through that. So I'm sure you'll hear more as we progress with our talks with SEIU. And then I'm really proud of this. We have N95 masks that are available. I was going to purchase these some months back from the N95 project, which was started to address the COVID crisis and also increase and enhance capacity in the U.S. for manufacturing and distribution of N95 masks. So these are made in America, which was probably some federal grants that helped with that. But the N95 project, they would sell things at wholesale. So these were about $2 a mask. I was trying to get a buy with other air districts, and it was turning to be like herding cats. So I sort of didn't do anything for a few months, and that was probably the best thing I ever did, because the N95 project is now shutting down because they see the COVID crisis is over. And they said, would you like to be donated some masks? So they had 200,000 available. I accepted 75,000. That was 5 pallets, and they're sitting down in our garage right now. And these will be made and distributed to the community during wildfire events. We also have air purifiers that will be loaned out to evacuation centers during wildfire events. And we can also send out these masks. I did drop off about 1,200 masks to the Ford Orr Environmental Justice Network with the provision and agreement for them to distribute the masks during wildfire events. So we're going to reach out with our local community so that they can deploy these masks should there be smoke from wildfires causing health impacts in our community. So we're really happy to say that. So we've got about, I don't know, there is an expiration date on these. They're July 2024. But further research said that masks that are 10 years old are still performing as they did day one. So.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I was just wondering if you had reached out to the Big Sur Fire about the masks being used in there in the Big Sur area during wildfires, because it's such an important place for folks to access something like that.
We will. We've got a limited, and once again, any suggestions on folks that we should talk to. I don't know what the situation is with among the counties. If OES has a stockpile of masks, I would assume they do. So who knows? I would say with a community of about 800,000 people, and of those, these will not be appropriate for children or young adults. If you just look at half, that's about 400,000. So we only have 75,000. But fortunately, some of these events, we see concentrated smoke in some areas, so we can target the response pretty surgically. Unintended too, they are surgical masks, by the way. All right. And then here is my plug too, and I've met with some of our new board members, but you do have the appointment of two representatives to our advisory committee, so don't forget that. And then we're still looking for our hearings board members, and we need a medical professional and an engineer. So if you know anybody that is involved with a medical profession, that could be a nurse, a PA, MD or DO, that would be great. But we've actually been having some scheduling difficulties because we're just barely scraping by with the current members that we have. And that concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sibben. I see that Director Askew has a question.
Thank you. I just wanted to a couple comments. And Rich, thank you for the update. It was a very complete. In regards to the 6 odor complaints that came in since the last meeting, I just want to comment that I think that could very likely be due to the fact that the odor study came out this winter. And so it has sort of re-risen the issue to the forefront of conversation in the community of Marina. Unfortunately, the report that came out, in my personal opinion, was less than complete, nor professional, in terms of trying to achieve the data recommendations that we were hoping for, that I was hoping for. So I think we'll continue to have that issue remain into the future. And then in regards to the wood stove changeout program and the cost of permitting fee that jurisdictions are charging, I was just wondering, in order to help our dollars go farther, I know many local jurisdictions share our commitment to reducing emissions, and there could be local policy opportunities either for the board members to take back to our local jurisdictions, but to look at how we can make sure that our local policies are supporting that wood stove changeout program, which would allow the MBARD incentives to go a little bit further. And then my last comment for you, Rich, I know I reached out to everyone that I knew in the medical professional community, trying to recruit someone for the hearings board. But the final sort of thought that I had for that is, if we need someone and we're unable to find one, it may be something that we could tap our local health department staff with being assigned to do. So if you do get to that point where we need those positions filled, let, I think, any of us from the counties know, and we can let our county health department team know that they need to assign someone to fill that role. But thank you for the presentation updates.
That's a great idea. I will contact Dr. Moreno and the new health officer in San Benito County. I just was introduced to her not long ago. And I completely agree with your assessment of the odor study. I reported that to the board at the last meeting. A lot of questions remain to be answered. And we feel that the report really didn't meet some of the minimal objectives of the study. So it's sort of back to the drawing board. But, you know, like I said, I think there's not going to be one direct party responsible for the odors. There's going to be multiple parties. So but thank you for comments.
Any other directors with questions on this item?
Yes. Yes, through the chair. Just a question on the meeting day for the advisory committee. If we were to ask once again for a medical professional, so the time that they meet, and also I would like to put in a request for a copy of that ATCO report, because I have to report. I sit on this board for the mayor, so I report out to 10 of them, and I'd like to give them, I do take notes, but I'd like to give them a little bit more thorough in my written report.
I'm taking your second comment first. My report is always published in the minutes, if you can wait, but I'm happy to get that to you before. And then I think you're referring to the hearing board.
Yes.
So we need a medical professional, and those are basically as needed. But we do
have second Friday of the month at 2 o'clock. Thank you.
But we don't have typically a lot of activity on the hearings board, so it's not a constant barrage of workload for them. So it may be every other month or every 3 or 4 months that they have to do.
Thank you. All right. Any additional questions? Seeing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda, which are items 11 to 17. Would any director like to pull an item on consent or any additional comments on consent? I see none. Is there any member of the community that would like to speak on the consent agenda?
No one's in the boardroom. Nothing received at the district office, and I don't see any hands raised online.
Thank you. I'll just express appreciation for item 16 on the extension for the county's project. I recognize that we need to get that project done, and I just appreciate staff's amenability on that. Is there a motion from a director for approving consent?
Make a motion to move the agenda.
Second.
We have a motion from Director Hernandez and a second from Director Brown. If we could have a roll call, please.
All right. Director Carbone?
Yes.
Chair Friend?
Aye.
Director Eskew?
Aye.
Director Bassanio?
Yes.
Director Adams?
Aye.
Director Hernandez?
Yes.
Director Brown?
Aye.
Approved unanimously. The chair, and I did ask for Chair Friend.
Yeah, you did, but I'll vote twice. Okay. Aye. We're good. All right, move on to the first item of the regular agenda, which is item 18, to receive a presentation on calendar year 2023 engineering and compliance activities. The recommended action is just to receive the presentation. There is no specific action on this. And Ms. Climo.
Good afternoon. I'm Amy Climo. I'm the engineering compliance manager, and I will be giving a brief update to the report that's provided in the agenda today. So first, I'll just give you a description of what we do in engineering compliance, and I'll give you a summary of some of the activity data from that annual report. And this is a report we provide to the board every year in February of the previous calendar year. So in engineering, our primary objective is to issue permits. So we evaluate permit applications for compliance with federal, state, and local regulations. And then we issue those permits with operating conditions to make sure they stay in compliance with those regulations. We develop rules and regulations as needed, and then we report annual stationary source emission inventory data to the state. So as I mentioned, the core of the work we do in engineering is permits, and so this is the overview of the permit process. So an application comes in, and it'll get assigned to an engineer, and they will do an engineering evaluation, which is a report that reviews all the rules and regulations applicable to that application, and then it'll also include emission calculations. And once they finish that review and confirm that we can move forward, they'll issue something called an authority to construct. And this is telling the applicant that their equipment meets all the rules and regulations and they can install the equipment. And then once that equipment's installed, the engineer will go out and do a start inspection to make sure that everything that they applied for matches what was installed. And if that's the case, then they'll come back to the office and they'll be able to issue that permit to operate. And so last year we received 329 applications. We issued 174 authorities to construct. We did 126 startup inspections, and we issued 219 permits to operate. And these are not all on the same time frame. We have a timeline where we review an application. We have up to 180 days. And so it's never going to be the number of applications received equal the number of permits to operate issued. And then on the compliance side, once that permit's issued, it goes to an inspector. And our inspectors can conduct inspections of those permitted sources to make sure that they're following their permit conditions. And if needed, they have the ability to take enforcement action for violations. We also have a separate team that ensures compliance with the federal asbestos regulation, and then we also respond to complaints. So some of the core activities in compliance, we last year did 1,588 inspections, and I'm happy to report that we are now fully staffed, both engineering and compliance. Finally got to that place by the end of last year. So that was great. We received 361 of those asbestos notifications, and those actually now all come in online through our database. They're paid online as well. We did 203 inspections of those asbestos notifications. We issued 5 variance orders, and those are the activities of the hearing board that we mentioned earlier. And then finally, we observed 22 source tests, and that's when depending on the source, they'll have to have a company come out and measure the emissions in the stack. So last year we received 254 complaints, and by far the largest portion of complaints that we receive are regarding odor or smoke. And of those 86 odor complaints, about 30%, 27, were the marine odor complaints. And then we also got a large portion of those, the smoke from outdoor fire. We had 77. A lot of those were from a fire prescriber in Santa Cruz County. And then I'll just wrap it up. This is a 10-year activity trend. So the top blue line is the total number of permits. So we've had a pretty steady around 3,000 permits. It's increased slightly over time. The middle blue line is the number of compliance inspections, and that's a lot more variable because it really depends on how many inspectors we have. So you can see rises and dips, and that's really dependent on the number of inspectors that we have. And then the bottom three lines show a really stable workload for us of permit applications that we're receiving, permits that are issued, and then the number of complaints we receive. So we have a steady workload that you can see here over the past 10 years. So we feel we have the we have a need for the staff that we have today. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Climo? I don't see any online, and there doesn't appear to be any in the room. And this is a non-action item, but is there any member of the community that would like to address us on this item?
No one in the boardroom, nothing received at the district office, but I do not see any hands raised online.
All right. Well, thank you, Amy, for that presentation. We'll move on to item 19, which is to accept the 2023 Planning Division annual report and receive a presentation. There is a recommended action associated with this. Mr. Frisbee?
Yes, please.
Well, David's doing this, I should give you an update on the audiovisual system. It should be done by the end of the month, so next meeting should operate. We will have both the additional monitors functioning. This one's actually going to go away, and we have cameras that will be functioning in place of our OWL, and the sound system will also be enhanced with newer microphones as well. So this should be a lot better.
I'm
going to give it all the credit to AMAC. They sort of forced us to come here. They've got some federal funds they need to spend. So.
All right. Good afternoon, Chairman Prince of our support. My name is David Frisbee. I'm planning Airmont and Denver here in the district. Update on all of our activities from 2023.
Good work to happen in our sorry. I'm just
okay, so what we do in planning, the planning visions, we have a wide range of things that we do. We review CEQA documents, environmental impact reports, negative declarations, emission studies. We administer grant programs. That's one of the main activities. We also administer the smoke management program and do some public outreach and then whatever special projects that come along. So last year, we reviewed 8 CEQA documents. There's, of course, many more projects in the region, but we don't get any funding for reviews of documents. So we have to triage those, find out which ones are most important for comments and not. We prioritize them out. There we go. Our grant program, we have several funding sources for our grant programs. We've got DMV fees from that were authorized by somebody called 2766 about 32 years ago. So we get $4 from every registered vehicle in the region, and we use those about half of the funds that we receive directed to transportation projects. Some of those are roundabouts, fund medium duty, fleet electrification of medium duty trucks. We fund the electric bicycle incentive program, electric vehicle incentive program. With our Carl Moyer Memorial Grant Program, that comes from the state of California. It's used to replace and repower diesel engines in tractors and marine vessels. Then there's the farmer program, which is funding agricultural replacement measures for emission reductions. It's a clever acronym that the state came up with. And that's used to repower or replace diesel tractors. Got our community air protection program, which focuses on emission reduction projects in disadvantaged communities in the region. We have three that are identified by the state of California. Those are mostly the city of Marina, the east and south part of Salinas, Pajaro, and a bunch of blocks of them. And then we have another DMV fund that comes from authorized by ASIMO 923. And we use that to fund zero emission school buses and our electric vehicle infrastructure program. So for our transportation projects, we did 11 total projects last year that were completed, $3 million roughly in grants, grant funding. So you can see the whole range there. We've got an example of one is the city of Salinas received three medium duty all-electric vehicles, two box trucks and one flatbed truck, and those replaced gasoline-powered vehicles, which were sold out of. They were either sold out of the area or destroyed. Our electric vehicle incentive program funded 166 incentives, $342,000. I think that's the breakdown right there. We've got 155 of those for all electric vehicles. This is a very popular program. When the slide comes up, you see testimonials on how the program has incentivized people that would, to buy an electric vehicle, get them to adopt an electric vehicle, whereas they wouldn't be able to without the incentives. So it's a really helpful program for a lot of people in the community. So our electric bicycle incentive program is also funded by Assembly Bill 2766, the DMV fees. We just allocated $50,000 last year. It was directed specifically to low-income applicants for the $500 per electric bike. We had not a whole lot of interest. We launched in July, and we only got 9 applications by the end of the year. And so we came back to the board in December, and the board adopted, your board adopted an increase of $750. And opened it up to the entire community regardless of income. And so now the program, a month and a half, 2 months later, is now closed because the funding got all taken up. So our DMV fees grants for 8923, we use those funds to match, we're required to match our Moyer grant program, so we use that as MAP funding. We also use it for the zero emission school bus program and the electric vehicle charging stations. And this is a picture of our first bus that was delivered in 2018 to Santa Rita School District. You see the distinctive blue wheels and bumpers. Those are company Elion that manufactures these buses. That's the same bus that is going to be delivered to us all at San Bernardino High School next week. Well, same funding source we used this to fund electric vehicle infrastructure. This is the station that was the first station that was funded through the program. It's behind the Broomdale Shopping Center. This was one of the fastest charging stations, around 200 kilowatts per hour. This is a charging station that was installed at the Camp Roberts rest area with 89.3 funds. See, it's because there wasn't power available to the rest areas. We opted for a solar system with battery charging, and so the DC fast charge actually runs off of battery. They do run a triple charge to it from the grid, but it does, it's mostly charged by solar panels. So with our Carl Moyer program, we completed 9 files last year, so 9 tractors, destroyed 13 tractors, and received 9 new tractors with $773,000 in funding. So this is an example of what we do. We take an old tractor, tier 0, dirty as they get, have them hauled out to A&S Metals, they get destroyed, blocks completely destroyed, the frames are cut in half. And then on the right, you'll see the brand new tractor that's delivered to the owner. It's just beautiful. So you get on to our farm grant program, which does the same, essentially does the same thing. It's mostly tractor projects. We did 12 projects for a little over $1 million. And we had the same, it's the same project essentially. It's an old tractor destroyed, and then we get a beautiful new tractor. A community air protection program, 8617 funds. We did 2 projects last year. We can do very similar projects to the others. We did 1 tractor replacement project and then another electric school bus to Monterey County Office of Education. So our WISPO reduction program, we received, now we've received $609,000 for that program. It's launched in December, so we don't really have many stats yet. It got off the slow start, so as Rich said earlier, we did increase the amounts of the incentives, so that would provide more of an incentive to participate. As an example of the project, we have on the left a old wood insert, and that gets pulled out and destroyed, and then the applicant receives a brand new insert, much cleaner grain. Our landscape equipment exchange program, we received $360,000 from CARB for the grant to replace old equipment, old lawnmowers and ditch blowers for brand new electric models. We pay up to 80% of the price of that. So it's both residential and it's commercial projects. We also get involved in a lot of outreach, trying to promote programs that we're involved with. Especially with the diesel engine equipment replacement program, we'll get the word out on that. And the stove change out programs. We also get involved in community events like Ride and Drive events we missed last year in September, where we promote the electric vehicle incentive program. And then do a lot of advertising on social media, websites, and radio. And we also do outreach in Spanish language. And Siri participates a lot with us on that channel, so quite a bit. We run the smoke management program, which we try to reduce the impact of smoke and prescribed burning on the community. This burn here was at Vineyard Ranch, southeast of Salinas, last October. You can see there's quite a bit of smoke that comes from these burns. And so we do a lot of advanced planning with the land managers, trying to keep the smoke from impacting the community. So we try to select the best days for burning that are going to be mixing the smoke out of the area. So we also do an online permitting systems for agriculture burning backyard burning as well. Last year, we issued 27 permits for prescribed fire with 6,287 acres burned, 184 ag burn permits, and 1,743 backyard burn permits. And some of the special projects we involved with San Luis Valley and San Luis County has historically been a real problem with wintertime wood smoke. So we have launched some programs up there, the Spare the Air program. We ask people to, under certain meteorological conditions, to limit their use of their wood stove or fireplace so that they don't impact their neighbors, as well as wood stove changeout program. We do air quality forecasting, which we do a forecast for the under conditions and let people know what the air quality is for next week. We update that twice a week. We've been recently involved with Blue Whales and Blue Skies Initiative, which we work with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the other coastal air districts, trying to reduce vessel speeds to less than 10 knots so that the impact on whales is less, and it also reduces emissions that when you come into our region. And then we recently received a grant from the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association to establish clean air centers in the region. So during a wildfire event, there'll be a location established that has air purifiers installed to create a clean space where people can come and have rest from wildfire smoke. And that, but answering your questions.
Thank you for your presentation. Were there any questions from directors? I see no questions online. Are there any questions there? I don't see any. We'll open it up to the community. Are there any questions or comments from members of the community?
No members in the boardroom. Nothing received at the district office. I do not see any hands raised. Oh, I do see one now.
Director Askew?
Let me see here if I can, hold on, let me change my audio. Okay, does that work? Okay. Okay. Just a couple questions in regard to the e-bike program, and I appreciate that the board made changes to the eligibility in December, which then resulted in, it seems like, a lot of interest in the program. In the conversations that I've had with folks over the past year since the program was opened up for our low-income residents, it seemed like some of the feedback was that the for low-income residents, the barriers to purchasing remained too large, even with the incentive program. However, in conversations with some of the low-income housing builders, specifically the Chispa, Alfred Diaz and Fonte low-income apartments that were just opened at East Garrison, there is limited parking available. So many of those units are, you know, 2, 3, 4 bedroom units with many adults of driving age, but they only have access to 1 or 2 parking spaces, which exceeds the number of folks who would otherwise need access to parking. And with some of the other changes around reduced parking minimums in transportation corridors, I'm wondering if, as we think about the future, if there's an opportunity to be more targeted and how we make those e-bikes available for low-income residents who will be potentially moving into an apartment that doesn't have parking accessibility, knowing that there's already a targeted audience that we would be reaching, potentially being able to leverage some of the grant funds that would be available through the low-income housing developers. So just a thought I wanted to put out on the table for everyone as we think about this moving forward. But thanks for the feedback and the update and a lot of great programs.
Thank you, Director Askew. Any other questions from directors?
If I may respond, Chair?
Sure, please.
I would just like to say that we've been in conversation and helped Living Better Lives, a nonprofit, work on a bicycle loan program for low-income residents. And we're helping them through the application process. And we, if they get the grant, we'll be on their advisory committee. And we hope to fund some of those bikes that would get out directly to the low-income community. So I think what we've learned is we're not really good at giving away bikes to low-income residents. I've got some other stories I could regale you with regarding folks that have shown up to our office demanding incentives for bikes they purchased several years ago. So it has been quite a ride. And I'm sure we could get better at it, but we would look to community members especially and your contacts to let us know and advise us on specific groups we could be talking to so that we can directly help fund some of these programs. I think that would be more impactful and probably more efficient.
Are there any other questions from directors before we open it up for the community? Seeing none, is there anyone there? Oh, I'm sorry, Director Brown, please.
I do have a question. Thank you for the presentation. It was very clear, and the documentation we got in our packet was also really helpful. So thank you for going through that. I wanted to ask about the Spare the Air Days. I just learned about this when I was up at San Jacinto Redwoods last week. And I'd just love to hear how that process works. You said you monitor meteorological conditions. How does that alert then get delivered, trying to visualize what it's like?
Okay, so yeah, we don't determine it day to day. We don't turn it off and on. You know, it'll be like, we'll look at the meteorological conditions for the next several days. If it looks like we're gonna get a strong inversion, temperature inversion coming into the region, we'll look at that. We'll look at the concentration of PM2.5 on our sensors in the valley. And then we look at that combination of things. And then if we see the concentrations going up and the pressure increasing and the temperature inversion increasing, then we'll call it Spare the Air. And we'll do an email blast through constant contact. We do some advertising. We'll do put out a press release. And we have assigned sound core signs at each of the fire districts in the valley. So we call our fire district friends and we have them put the boards out. And so, you know, thousands of people drive up and down Highway 9 every day. That's how we board out. And then so we'll set a date and say, okay, today at 3 o'clock, we'll start to Spare the Air. It's a voluntary program. You can go through and decide how to heat your home, that we ask you not to use wood. And then we'll see that conditionings that a couple days later are improving. So we'll call it off that one. We'll do press releases on that one.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you. Any other questions before we open up to the community? Seeing none, we'll open it up to the community. Is there anybody there that would like to address us on this item?
No one in the boardroom and nothing received at district office. You do not see any hands raised online.
Great. This is an action item, so bring it back to the board for a motion for the recommended actions. Is there a motion?
Second.
A motion from Director Brown. Was that a second from Director Arsonio? I couldn't see who that was.
Hernandez.
I'm sorry about that. All right, so I have a motion from Director Brown and a second from Director Hernandez. If we could have a roll call, please.
Will do. Chair Friend.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Yes.
Director Arsonio.
Yes.
Director Eskew.
Yes.
Director Adams.
Aye.
Director Hernandez.
Aye.
Director Brown.
Aye.
Pass unanimously.
Thank you. We'll move on to item 20, also an action item, which is to accept the 2023 Air Monitoring Division Annual Report and to receive a presentation. We have Mr. Boyle here for the presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Friend. Good afternoon, everybody. Sean Boyle here, Supervisor, Air Monitoring and Planning. Thank you, Mark. Here to give you the 2023 Air Monitoring Summary. We will share this. All right, so here we go. So what does the air monitoring division do here? So we operate, maintain a net to determine compliance with the ambient air quality standards that are set forth by the federal and state regulations there. In our air district, we're called North Central Coast Air Base. And for us to do this, we need sophisticated equipment. So we need air monitoring sample stuff that kind of measures the air pollutant concentrations over a specific time period based on air quality standards. So here's an example of kind of what this equipment looks like. It's very technical. Lots of computer network stuff has to talk to each other. We have dedicated staff that knows how to work this stuff and make sure it's always up and running to make sure that we're getting the integrity of the data intact for this stuff. So the federal government and the state, they have standards based on criteria pollutants based off of medical and scientific studies, as well as secondary welfare factors. There are six criteria pollutants that are recognized. Here in MBAR, we concentrate on three pollutants. That's ozone, which is a strong oxidant gas, as well as PM10 and PM2.5. So this particulate matter can vary in composition and toxicity. So we have eight stations in our air district. Six of these stations we sample for ozone, which includes Pinnacle National Park, which is run by the National Park Service. Six stations we sample for PM2.5, and three stations we sample for PM10. So here's an example of kind of what these air monitoring stations look like. The instrumentation is inside the enclosures and the sample ports are on the outside of the station there. So let me get into the data from 2023. So this is the daily 1 hour average and this is the state standard. It's 90 parts per billion. As you can see, we are within attainment for 1 hour ozone with the state. So that's great news. So here is the daily 8 hour peak ozone average for the state national standard, which you can see the line there is 70 parts per billion. And again, we are within that standard for 2023. So again, that's great news. So we thought we would do a 10 year trend so you can kind of see what the air quality has been doing over the last 10 years. So we base it off of 2013 and 2023. 2013, we were around 100 parts per billion. And as 10 years have moved on for the state standard, we're around 80. So that's kind of good news right there, especially in our area. You know, ozone is bad for lung capacity and breathing, you know, especially for children and elderly and compromised people. But we also have a lot of agriculture up here. And ozone is known to be bad on crop damage and crop yield. And as you can kind of see, those three kind of spiked right there, 2016, 2018, 2020, those were wildfire events that we had in our district. So as you can see, there's a correlation between wildfire impacts and ozone concentrations. So I'm going to get into the PM10 concentrations, the 24-hour average. So 50 micrograms per cubic meter is the state pretty much goalpost right there. We had 13 exceedances in 2023. So these spikes you see right there, the first two, the one around February and around July, that would happen at our San Juan Batista station. These were short duration events from food preparation and mowing grass that was happening around the station, and the monitor just kind of picked it up. But what you see there right around the October timeframe is when we had a wildfire impact. From the Canadian wildfires that kind of mixed with the wildfire smoke, we were getting impacts from the Pacific Northwest as well as Northern California, kind of made this soup that just kind of came in. That's what the monitors picked up. Then you can kind of see right there, right after the October to the November date, that's kind of the typical pattern we see down in King City with those annual wind events we have there. So it picks up a lot of dust off the Salinas Valley, as well as farmers working in the fields and tilling the soil. A lot of that fugitive dust gets in the air. So a lot of those impacts are down at our King City station. Then again, we have a short duration impact there in December where there was some construction work being conducted next to our station at the monitor. So here's the 10-year trend for PM10 right there. And as you can see, we've been non-attainment of the standard for a while. And see that spike in 2020? That's when we had three wildfires going at once in our district, the CZU, the River Fire, and the one in Carmel Valley. So the monitor really picked up those concentrations of PM10 at that time. Since then, it's kind of gone down, but we're still in non-attainment for PM10. So the 2023 PM2.5 concentrations were relatively doing great up until, again, the September 20th. That day as well, with the PM10 monitors, we picked up a lot of 2.5 that day, again, from that wildfire impact with the soup I was talking about. Five of our stations were over the federal standard. They're at 35 micrograms per cubic meter. So here is the 10-year trend from 2013 to present. And you see those three spikes, there's those wildfire event impacts that we were having. Especially in 2020, we picked up a lot of 2.5. And since 2021, we've been pretty much in attainment for 2.5. So we also have a smoke sensor network. We have 30 sensors throughout our jurisdiction in municipalities and other populated areas. And these sensors give us non-regulatory data, kind of help us with our smoke management program, like you were saying, Chairman Brown. So it helps us, with getting data on wildfire smoke, prescribed burning, open burning, burning from home heating, chimney smoke. We also revamped our air monitoring website. So we took this data and had it ease of use for the public to access. We also combined it with the EPA air quality index right there, or the colored dots on the side right there, for the public to get this easy access of current data at their fingertips. This data also kind of helped us do what we just talked about, the Spare the Air up in San Lorenzo Valley. I believe it was around December 5th, we did a voluntary Spare the Air based on data off this stuff. For 2023, overall, the summary is, geography and geology is a big factor of kind of our air quality right here, whether it's an issue or a benefit. But overall, I think the 2023 air quality for our area has been in the good category. For 2024, you could probably see the trend of the PM10 being in non-attainment based on as well as the trend of wildfire smoke, not only from other parts of California or out of state, but even out of the country.
Yeah, presented about air quality during wildfires, because we've experienced so much of them. Is there any data that shows as we convert from gas-powered cars and vehicles of all types? Impact for the positive, on the positive side.
Yeah, I can take a stab at that. The empirical data that we've seen is actually the big test that we had a couple of years ago with COVID. Initially during the phase, we saw a significant reduction in motor vehicle traffic and trips, motor vehicle miles traveled. As a result, we saw throughout the state, the air quality was enhanced. So as people got used to the crisis though, they started driving more, and then we saw all those gains go back to status quo. So as you may know, in 2035, the state of California is going to outlaw the sale of all new combustion motor vehicles. So we're going to hopefully most of our public fleets and citizen fleets will be changing over to electric vehicles at the time. We expect to see huge gains in air quality as a result. Currently, 70% around there, that much, is attributable to pollution from automobiles. And then rounding out the top three would be power generation is another one. So we have a huge plant here. And then a small sliver of that is industrial and manufacturing within our jurisdiction. So by and large, the largest contributor is transportation. And we've seen huge gains in that, by the way. We've made great strides because California has received a waiver from the Clean Air Act to set its own standards independent of the rest of the nation. So we've led the country, if not the world, in new technologies to reduce air pollution for motor vehicles. So our fleets are pretty clean, but hopefully in 2035, air quality will be significantly enhanced.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from directors? I see none online either. Is there anybody in the community that would like to address us on this issue?
No one in the boardroom, nothing received at the district office. We do not see anyone online.
Perfect. And Director Adams, little known fact, as a new director, you're required to give a full report out on all the science that you learn about during these presentations, including all the acronyms. Good luck. They give you like a 700 page book as a welcoming gift to this commission. It's such a wonderful thing. All right. Is there a motion for the recommended actions on this item?
So moved.
Second.
All right, so we do have a motion and a second. Siri, do you mind calling the roll on this?
No problem. So, Director Carbone.
Yes.
Chair Plan.
Aye.
Director Eskew.
Aye.
Thank you. Director Adams.
Aye.
Director Hernandez.
Aye.
Director Brown.
Aye.
Director Estonio stepped out. We have six. We have quorum. Passing out.
Wonderful. We'll move to item 21, which is to approve an amendment to the employment agreement for the District Air Pollution Control Officer. We have Ms. Rosales here for that item, but the information is also in your packet. Welcome.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm Rosa Rosales, Administrative Services Manager. So at the December 2023 closed session with the Board of Directors, the board authorized an 8% salary increase for our APCO Richard Stedman. This increase will be effective February 19, 2024. There were no other changes to his employment agreement. I have attached a copy of the amended contract reflecting the salary increase. And we are recommending that the Board of Directors approve this amendment for the agreement.
Thank you. Are there any questions from any of the directors? We appreciate the work that Mr. Stedman has done, and it was a very positive review in our performance review. Are there any questions or comments from directors? I see none online. Is there anybody there? Any director? No?
Present in the room, nothing received.
All right. We'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I'd like to recommend approval of this increase.
Second.
We have a motion from Director Carbone and a second from Director Brown. Right. If we could have a roll call, please.
Right. Director Brown.
Aye.
Director Hernandez.
Aye.
Director Adams.
Aye.
Director Eskew.
Aye.
Director Sonio is out of the room. Chair Friend.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Approved unanimously.
Thank you. We'll move to our final item, which was removed item five, which is the election of the 2024 Board of Directors, Chair and Vice Chair. The Budget Personnel Nominating Committee did meet and unanimously recommended that Chris Lopez be chair and Colin Kosmicki be vice chair. But are there any additional nominations or any additional conversation on this before we move the item for consideration? I see no one. I'm sorry, go ahead, Siri.
No one here in the boardroom, we did not receive anything in the district office.
Okay, is there a motion then to make Chris have to run these meetings?
I'll make the motion to recommend Chris as the chair and Kosmicki as the vice chair.
Carbone will second.
Right, we have a motion from Director Hernandez and a second from Director Carbone. Thank you for letting me serve as chair for the last year. If we could have a roll call, please.
Director Brown.
Aye.
Director Hernandez.
Aye.
Director Adams.
Aye.
Director Eskew.
Aye.
Chair Friend.
Aye.
Director Carbone.
Aye.
Through unanimously.
Right. Well, that was the last item on our agenda. And so thank you all for your patience with me doing
there's
it remote.
There's a hand raised by Director Adams.
So forgive me for this. I should have commented on this earlier, but just under, to make sure that everything is clear, under item 21, the contract for the salary, there is a word missing on the final sentence that I think we want to be sure we include. It reads, effective February 19, 2024, employee shall a salary of $252,649, and I think we want the word received to be added in there.
Good catch. That was sort of speed reading.
I was thinking it, but I didn't write it down.
If I may just comment, I'd like to thank Chair Friend for his running the meetings this past year. It was really great working with you. And on a personal note, this represents, yesterday was my 14th year with the agency. So.
Can I also, Chair, if I could, keep the meeting going for one more moment to say thank you for your service as chair. You really are one to emulate in terms of running an efficient meeting and moving us through, but also giving opportunities to work things out. And so wonderful chair as chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Sandy. Appreciate that.
I've learned a lot my own experience.
I appreciate that. I'm really looking forward to one day getting my own cutting board from Rich. That's all the only reason. That's the only reason why I'm on this committee.
An extra big cutting board.
It'll be paddle shaped.
Right. Well, thank you, everybody. That's the last item on our agenda. Appreciate everybody's time.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right.